This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
But we're going to start with Call Me By Your Name now. So, Will, do you want to sort of take us away with this week's release?
I'd love to. I'll come off right at the bat. I really enjoyed Call Me By Your Name. It is... I'd only seen one film by the director before, which came out last year, which I did have issues with. The characters in it weren't so nice, and you couldn't really... I couldn't empathise with any part of it. But this was totally different. I was really pleasantly surprised. The critical praise that it's been receiving, I think, is definitely justly deserved. Are we going to go into a little bit of synopsis briefly?
Yeah, we'll give a bit of context to the film. It came out a few months ago now, and it was kind of the festival film of the year, if you will. So, do you want to just give a bit of an explanation?
Yeah, sure. It focuses on a 17-year-old American-French boy called Elio living in a very beautiful villa in Italy, and his interactions with the 24-year-old Armie Hammer character who is helping his art history professor father out over the summer, and how their relationships change. And it's been called a coming-of-age film, which I suppose it is, but I feel like that kind of undermines it in a way. It is exceptionally beautiful and funny as well, which I wasn't expecting. I did laugh quite a bit. Not as much as Thor, but, you know, a good enough amount. And it for me, it perfectly encapsulated that idea of, not to be too melodramatic, but those beautiful, like, summer romances. And I know we went to see it with Joe, who's been on the show before, and he said how old it made him feel, because it just made you feel so youthful, and how everything is in that kind of listless area where you don't have any responsibility whatsoever.
So do you think it's kind of a nostalgic youth that we're looking at, rather than youth itself?
When it was only 20 minutes in when I realised that it was set in a different period. I thought they were just hipsters.
You and Joe both managed to miss that at the start it flagged up summer 1983 somehow.
Did it?
Joe was eating his ice cream, but I mean, you know, we were still settling in. It did say at the start, but yeah, it's not immediately apparent. Like, I remember... Joe, who's sadly not on the show, actually said, like, I don't feel like this guy. I don't feel like I read as much as this guy or any. And I said, well, you've got to remember, we are a different generation to this guy. Yeah. It is set like 36 years ago.
He's not being distracted by Stranger Things. He can get on with his reading.
He doesn't have an iPad or YouTube or any of the things we have today, which maybe take for granted. And then we see this sort of culturally sophisticated lad who just spends his life kind of, you know, taking on everything that his dad's saying, and he's just absorbing it all. And then he's kind of becoming this very sort of culturally aware guy at such a young age. And I think that's almost what spurs on this romance. So do you want to kind of go into a bit of that?
I think on your point, it's that weird mixture of envy and compassion that the audience feels with the characters involved. We're just like, oh, I wish I could be living in that villa in Italy. And they're good blokes as well. They deserve it. The relationship between Armie Hammer and Oliver, his character, Elio, does it slowly blossoms and then quite abruptly changes pace. I think, and I didn't have issue with that personally. I thought the film was beautifully paced. It wasn't the kind of thing where I was like, oh, I don't want this to end. But I thought, if it's gonna, then it has to be at that point. And it totally hit its mark every time, I thought.
I agree with that. I feel like, you know, we're going into this film kind of aware that this love story is going to take place before the characters.
Yeah, it's like on the posters.
Yeah, so we're kind of looking at it thinking, well, we know where this is going, so how are we going to get there? And it just feels like there's this sort of inattention in every scene. And I read this beautiful thing in this film review that said that that you learn so much from the characters in every scene without them even having to say anything or anything to do with what they're actually thinking. And I think it takes real skill for a film to actually do that, to be with the characters and learn about them without actually anything actually being said.
Yeah, I think the novel on which it's based is written in the first person, and somehow the director has managed to encapsulate that in you totally get into his headspace. And there is, it's not abundant in dialogue either. What I'd like to say is that I feel everyone can relate to this film. I would recommend it to anyone. In a similar way to Moonlight, it shouldn't be one of those films which is boxed in by its genre. I think the general theme of it, I've pulled up a quote here, is a wonderful speech by one of the main characters towards the end. It says, "But to feel nothing so as not to waste anything, what a waste. So as not to feel anything, what a waste." And it's that overarching theme of just grasping life in a carpe diem type way. And whatever your situation might be, I think everyone can take something really positive back from this.
Yeah, completely agree. So that was actually Timothée Chalamet's, if I'm pronouncing that right.
I'm so glad that you've pronounced it first.
His character of Elio, that's his father, who's only credited as Mr. Pellman, played by Michael Stuhlbarg.
Brilliantly. I'd like to see him in everything now.
Yeah, and I think maybe we should actually take the time to actually discuss this guy's character a little bit. So the way he entered the film, I thought he just hit the ground running, and from there he was just this likeable character who just kept coming up throughout the film and just kind of owned the scene he was on, like, in, really. And,
in
what way did he kind of impact the way you saw it? Because
it's just one of those, in such a contrast to this director's last film, it's one of those movies in which you just like everyone, you warm to them all. And there's some people who make questionable choices or that don't come off the best, but even so, there's this total non-biased empathy for everyone in it. And his character especially, he has an interesting arc. We learn more about him as it progresses, and nothing feels forced or like a big twist or anything. Just feels, it is the most like a fly on the wall experience that I've had in this very structured fictional film.
Yeah, I think for the character Mr. Pellman, played by Michael Stuhlbarg, I feel like it's the same way I look at the film Room, which came out a couple years ago now, in that it's kind of like the best possible outcome or situation that these people could be in.
Yeah.
And I feel like for the character of Elio to have a father like the one he's with, that's potentially the best possible outcome he could have got. And because the scenes are tense and we do kind of see that Elio's struggling, I feel like his father in it is a light relief, in that you do feel his support, and there's this constant if you need me, I'm here to talk to you. I think, given that we are sort of following Elio's character, I think we can just see that he does have people around him that support him, even though he may be struggling with how he's feeling or what he's going through.
Yeah, it's almost like a trapeze artist with a safety net underneath. You think, whatever bad happens to Elio, I can relax knowing that he is surrounded by these warm, comforting people around him.
Yeah, I agree. And I suppose that leads us on nicely to Hammer's character of Oliver, who I think was just accepted like a second son in it. And I feel like the way the relationship between Elio and Oliver unfolds isn't just romantic, it is almost like brotherly in a way. And there's actually a lyric in one of the songs saying, you know, I love you like a brother. And I know that sounds weird. And I feel like it is kind of like a brotherly love, in that he actually says, like, his dad says, you can speak to me, Elio, but Elio doesn't want to speak to him, but he says to Oliver, I can speak to you about this. And it's kind of the relief of being able to speak to someone outside of this family who still feels a connection.
There's a resemblance in this film to Women in Love, the Ken Russell film, which has that famous wrestling scene which turns into something a tad more amorous, let's say. And there's a theme throughout of this weird link between total friendship and bonding, and how that can change so naturally into something else and then flip back. And the entire all the relationships of the film felt very organic and live, and nothing was stagnant.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know what, actually, I think organic's a really good sort of terminology to use, especially in this film, because the whole sort of location, I mean, for me, the film wins on location alone.
Yeah.
Like, before any of, you know, this delicate and sort of deep subject matter, it is just, why wouldn't you make a film in this location? It's absolutely mesmerizing, it's absolutely stunning. And the way they pace out these just astounding shots throughout the film, like, it just feels like there is a very sort of organic feel to the film entirely through not just its subject, but also where it is.
Absolutely. And there's that one line to explain, like, three quarters of the way in, where it's like, oh, she inherited this villa. Like, ah, okay, that's how these academics are managing to live in such a beautiful, amazing villa in the middle of Italy.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is so that you don't feel like they're too upper class to be removed from them. But it was so, like, sumptuous. It's just lots of beautiful people wearing nice clothes, drinking, and travelling around Italy. And I love that. I'd watch another hour of that.
Yeah, and yeah, I think I would as well. Like, there was just this incredible attention to the detail, because you know, as a film itself, like, it had substance, it has legs, but then you just throw in, like, all this sort of accoutrement to the scenes, and suddenly you've just got this just these fantastic images. And I felt like with Loving Vincent a couple of weeks ago that we discussed, I felt like, oh my god, this looks incredible. But then you kind of get used to the fact that it's painted and everything. And so then what you begin to focus on is the story itself. So that, like, though the painting is amazing throughout, you begin to focus on other things. But I felt like with Call Me By Your Name, the way they shot it and what they choose to frame in the shot didn't grow old for me, because it felt so nicely spaced out. Like, there are just these unforgettable shots throughout, like,
yeah,
you know, when they go and jump in the lake, and then there's one with him in the garden. And I just think there's so much of it throughout that did stick with me, and I feel like it's a film I actually want to go and rewatch again purely.
I definitely would. The camera work is so relaxed. Nothing is rushed at all in this film.
No.
The characters, like, it's amazing. I can't recommend it enough.
It's incredibly pensive. And I feel like, you know, there are elements of sort of Tarkovsky, Andrei Tarkovsky's work.
Yeah.
Especially that of Mira. And then at the end...
Oh, the fire, yeah. How it's so... Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, well, even just his sort of fixation. I feel like Tarkovsky's got this sort of water fixation. And it's just incredible the way that, you know, he often relays, like, this sort of, like, poetry over just these shots of just tranquil water. And you're kind of thinking, you know, there's not much to it, but you really do just enjoy just being there and taking it all in. Whether you understand the poetry or appreciate it, like, you do just take it in. And then there's elements of Bergman in there. I felt like, especially at the end with Winter Light, which takes place purely in the snow, this film, it's very about this sort of deep psychological analysis of its characters, all Bergman's films that like that. So I felt like there was just this treatment of these sort of films that sort of deal with the same sort of stuff, and I thought that it handled it very well. In the same way the new Blade Runner film handled the old film, I felt like it kind of approached these sort of old sort of styles of filmmaking that kind of inspired sort of this sort of cinephilia, like, itself. And I think it kind of did real justice to it. I felt like there was even elements of Alfred Hitchcock in there. You know, these sort of Hitchcockian sort of, I don't know, subtle references. Like, there's the end of North by Northwest when the train goes into a tunnel.
Yeah, I was thinking
so
about
sort
that.
Of double entendres. And it felt like there were a few of them in there. So it felt like it was incredibly, like, playful as well.
Yeah, playful was on my mind throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
I think what... The way I'd recommend seeing this film is to get a blanket if possible and the biggest pot of tea and just relax.
Yeah.
You'll enjoy it.
I completely agree. I know we've gone over slightly, but me and Will were definitely excited to talk about this one. It deserves all the praise it's getting. I hope it does find its audience. So have you got a quick final thought?
Go see it. That's it.
Yeah, perfect advice.